This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Two business councils disband. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka, in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Thursday, August 17th. And here's what we have for you this hour.
Following President Trump's combative news conference Tuesday night, two White House economic councils have abruptly disbanded.
The mother of Heather Heyer, the woman killed in Charlottesville Saturday, says her daughter's legacy is just beginning.
City and state officials around the country struggle to decide what, if anything, to do with Confederate monuments.
And as you grow old, you might want to consider moving to Utah.
We're looking at the senior care services in those regions and the cost of those services. So things like assisted living costs, the cost of in-home care services, as well as the quality of those services as measured by some third-party objective measures, self-reported well-being, and consumer reviews.
Tim Sullivan of Caring.com will be here in about 20 minutes to give us information on the best and worst states for older folks. Following President Trump's controversial response to last weekend's violence in Charlottesville, two of the president's business councils have decided to disband. This morning's Mike Gavin has a story.
Business leaders have disbanded two CEO councils created by the White House, a move they said was in protest to President Trump's failure to sufficiently condemn racism. Their decision marks a dramatic break between the U.S. companies and a president who sought close ties with them. In the hours that followed Trump's combative news conference Tuesday evening, during which he appeared to apportion blame equally between white supremacist groups and counter-protesters for deadly violence in Charlottesville, executives on two prominent advisory councils started calling each other to discuss whether to stay on. Today's Wall Street Journal says on a 45-minute call yesterday morning, members of the President's Strategic and Policy Forum decided to dissolve the group. Around the same time, the Manufacturing Council also had a call and decided to disband. Shortly after the councils informed Trump advisor Jared Kushner that they were disbanding, Trump posted on Twitter that he had dissolved the councils. A White House spokesman declined to comment. Jen.
Thanks, Mike. With tears and defiant tributes, hundreds of purple-clad people packed a Charlottesville theater to remember the 32-year-old woman killed when a suspected white nationalist crashed his car into anti-racist demonstrators Saturday. Heather Heyer, a paralegal whom colleagues say was devoted to social justice, was killed after clashes between white nationalists attending a Unite the Right gathering and counter-protesters. Heyer's mother, Susan Bro, says her daughter will never be forgotten.
We don't all have to die. We don't all have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her.
Bro told the gathering that her daughter's favorite Facebook post was, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." Heather's father, Mark Heyer, also addressed mourners.
She loved people. She wanted equality. And in this issue of the day of her passing, she wanted to put down hate.
In the crowd were Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, Senator Tim Kaine, and Charlottesville Mayor Mike Signer. Meanwhile, last night, thousands gathered on the University of Virginia campus for a peaceful candlelight vigil against hate and violence. Marchers covered the same ground that hundreds of torch-carrying white nationalists had taken last Friday. All across the country, state and local authorities are considering what, if anything, to do with Confederate statues. In Flashpoint, Virginia, Governor Terry McAuliffe has called for all of the state's public Confederate statues to be removed and relocated. The governor says he hopes residents would agree the statues represent a barrier to progress, inclusion, and equality. Meanwhile, in Durham, four protesters have been arrested for toppling the statue of a Confederate soldier Monday night and charged with felonies related to inciting and participating in a riot. In Baltimore, several Confederate monuments were removed before dawn yesterday in a stealth operation that highlights the growing backlash against such memorials across the country. This man says he was disappointed by the city's unannounced move.
I realize there's still a lot of hate in this country, which I don't tolerate. I'm an ex-soldier myself, served in the Army 6 years, and I just don't see the need for all this. You know, I know there's a lot of problems we got to deal with, but let's sit at the table and deal with them.
But this resident agreed with Baltimore's decision to take down the statues.
Very proud of Baltimore. We've had a rough summer, but I'm very proud of us in this moment.
For years, these monuments have given rise to debates, with preservationists arguing that taking them down erases history, while opponents say they represent white supremacy and a history of subjugating African Americans.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay coming to you this morning from the Dell Studios. Need help finding the right Dell PC with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL and talk to a Dell Small Business Tech Advisor. We're seeing that there's a very fine line between free speech and hate speech, and that's causing a problem for schools as we head back into the classroom. Melissa Korn of the Wall Street Journal has written about the struggle facing teachers and joins us now. Melissa, how can teachers use last week's events in Charlottesville as a teachable moment?
I think a lot of schools are trying to figure that out right now, given that school is not in session in most of the country quite yet. Teachers do have a little bit of time to figure that out, how to talk about free speech, how to talk about when it turns to hate speech and violence. The history of some of the white nationalist or white supremacist movements. And there's some resources going around online under the hashtag Charlottesville Curriculum, where teachers are posting their ideas, you know, whether it's frank discussions or possible books to read. That's mostly at the K through 12 level. At the higher ed level, those discussions might be a little bit more in-depth, a little bit more nuanced, and a little bit more confrontational. That's something that universities are trying to figure out. They want to support free speech. They want to support intellectual inquiry, but they also don't want anything that veers into violence.
What are some of the tips that teachers are sharing, perhaps more on the high school level, that have worked or they've seen work in their own schools?
I don't think we know yet, because they're still just getting underway with the current school year. So we don't know what they're going to be doing yet on Charlottesville. But we've seen teachers try to figure this out, even just in June when there was the shooting of Republican congressmen and staffers in Virginia, and after San Bernardino, you know, way back after 9/11, trying to figure out what does this mean, and you know, where do we put this in the context of history? So whether it's a history class or a civics class, even an English class, you know, what's being written about this? There's a lot of opportunities to discuss.
We're speaking with Melissa Korn of the Wall Street Journal. How can teachers encourage students to exchange ideas without them getting shouted down?
So it's a lot about explaining the value of civic discourse, the importance of hearing other people's opinions so that you can possibly change yours or, you know, be more confident in your own. You know, does my thought on this topic stand up against criticism? If it does, great. If it doesn't, I'll change my mind. So putting it in the context of this is an opportunity to learn, this is an opportunity to figure out what you really believe in, rather than who can talk loudest. I've had some college presidents say, you know, we want to bring provocative speakers to campus. We want to have these difficult conversations because that's the only way to really test your theories.
Are educators bringing in any kind of professionals to help teachers sort through this?
Not that I know of, although there are, you know, conversations, whether it's in the faculty lounge or during professional development training sessions about just how, you know, brainstorming, how should we do this? But there's not really outside experts coming in on the curriculum side.
Melissa, with social media so prevalent now and kids as young as, you know, third and fourth grade getting their own phones and things like that, debate used to be something I would think only used to be in high schools. But is this kind of a conversation even trickling down to elementary schools?
It's absolutely trickling down to lower grades. And there are age-appropriate ways of having these conversations. You know, there's no reason a fourth grade teacher can't be talking about what's happening in current events and what it means and why it happened. And, you know, how does it make you feel, asking the students? The kids in the classroom come from so many different backgrounds that there's value in hearing their experiences. And if it's something that they're talking about with their families at home, it makes sense for them to be talking about it in the classroom as well.
Thanks, Melissa. Melissa Korn of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of today's First News.
Well, Jennifer, hundreds gathered on the University of Virginia campus last night for a candlelight vigil against hate and violence days after the chaos of Saturday's white nationalist rally in Charlottesville. A crowd estimated at over 2,000 people marched through Center City, Philadelphia, in response to last weekend's deadly violence. And even across the country in Olympia, Washington, marchers converged on City Hall there in unity against fascism and racism. Virginia's governor is calling for the removal of statues honoring heroes of the Confederacy across the state. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh moved quickly and quietly to have four Confederate monuments removed overnight Wednesday, and citizens are applauding.
And she cited the commission report that suggested they be removed. She said, hey, this was from the last administration. They formed a commission. The commission said remove them, and they didn't. I will.
Alabama's attorney general is suing the city of Birmingham and its mayor for violating the Alabama Memorial Preservation Act by obscuring a Confederate monument in a downtown park. The box-like structure covers a panel identifying the memorial to Confederate soldiers and sailors. Titans of industry rushed to the doors following the president's controversial remarks in which he equated white nationalist hate groups with the protesters opposing them. So the White House formally pulled the plug on President Trump's main panels of top corporate leaders. Trump announced on Twitter he would end his executive councils rather than put pressure on executives. Two pilots and three crew members of an Army Black Hawk helicopter that went down during a training exercise off Oahu Tuesday night are still missing. Lieutenant Colonel Curtis Kellogg of the 25th Infantry Division.
Right now, those search efforts are focused around a debris field found this morning, and some pieces of debris have started to be recovered.
Two Black Hawk crews were training northwest of Honolulu when communications were lost with one of them. They're calling it a liquid biopsy, a blood test that detects cancer-related DNA mutations in more than half of patients with early-stage malignancies. An international research team, including doctors at Johns Hopkins, now wants to test more patients and with different tumor types, and to conduct clinical trials to determine the impact of early detection on cancer outcomes.
And that's just great news all around.
A blood test.
Unbelievable. Hopefully that comes up pretty soon. Thanks, Rasa. Jennifer Kashinka and Rasa Kay in for Gordon Deal this morning. As you grow older, you might want to head to Utah. That's the best state to grow old in, according to a new report from Caring.com. With more on that report is Caring.com's Vice President Tim Sullivan. Tim, what did Caring.com evaluate?
We wanted to look at the quality of the senior care services in state by state, as well as the cost of those services, to get a feel for the best places to grow old, not just immediately after retirement, but on through your 60s and 70s and 80s.
So contrary to the best states to retire in rankings, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're looking at the senior care services in those regions and the cost of those services. So things like assisted living costs, the cost of in-home care services, as well as the quality of those services as measured by some third-party objective measures, self-reported well-being in those states, and consumer reviews of the communities and home care services and the like in the various states.
Okay, what do we like about Utah?
Well, Utah is strong across the board. They're not number one in anything, But they are close to the top in a lot of the different categories. And they came in at seventh for overall quality. And their cost is very reasonable, where they came in at 14th. So it's the combination of those two strengths that push them to the top of the list.
What are some of the other states that are at the top?
So Iowa is number two, and they follow the same profile as Utah. They're not quite as strong, but they're strong across the board, and their cost is also reasonable. South Carolina is number three, and they follow a little bit of a different pattern where you get okay care. They are ranked 22nd for quality, but it comes at a great value. Their cost ranking is number six. In Washington, which is number four, we see the other side of that coin. They are 38th for cost, so somewhat expensive, but they are top of the list in terms of quality. With Nebraska at number five, we see a similar pattern, but without as being as high in the rankings as Utah and Iowa. But they have a good combination of quality and cost.
On the flip side, what are some of the worst?
Well, coming in at 50 was West Virginia. And while they are relatively inexpensive, they are at the bottom for quality of care. At 48, we see New York, which is notable for having some of the highest cost of care in the nation. They are tied at 46. But we don't see a corresponding jump in the quality of the care that you get, where they're 34th. Obviously, that's not all the way down at the bottom of the rankings, but for being one of the more expensive states, you would hope to see a higher ranking in terms of cost.
Thanks, Tim. That's Tim Sullivan of Caring.com. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
It's Thursday, August 17th. I'm Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories this morning. Two of Trump's business councils disband after CEOs defect. White House strategist Steve Bannon has attacked white nationalists as clowns as the fallout from violent protests in Charlottesville continues. Another hack at HBO, this time of its Twitter accounts. Five Army soldiers missing after a helicopter crash off the coast of Hawaii. And the story of a tired boy and his cow. That in about 20 minutes. It may be the GOP's nastiest primary, the race in Indiana between Todd Rokita and Luke Masser. Kevin Robillard of Politico has written about this slugfest and joins us now. Kevin, what's happening in Indiana right now?
Yeah, so in Indiana, there's a very vulnerable Democrat, Senator Joe Donnelly. He's the last Democrat elected statewide in the state. And two Republican congressmen have both entered the primary to replace him, Todd Rokita and Luke Masser. And what makes this really interesting is how quickly that primary has gotten nasty. Masser has accused Rokita of spreading lies about Messer's wife. Both of them have called the other unhinged. Masser has called Rokita a ticking time bomb. So this has gotten very, very nasty, very, very quickly. both men really only officially entered the race last week, and they had started attacking each other even before that.
And these two are pretty familiar with each other?
Yeah, so they both went to this small college, Wabash, which is in northern Indiana. It's a small liberal arts school that, when they went there, was all male until fairly recently. And it's a school that has a lot of prominent alums among sort of Indiana's political class. It's a school that sends a lot of, for example, a lot of Wabash alums are in the Indiana State Legislature, stuff like that. And they've basically been circling each other for about 30 years since they were there. And it's not necessarily a thing where the two of them were constantly butting heads, but it's this thing where Rokita became Secretary of State at a very young age and has really worked very hard for many of the things he's gotten, whereas Messer has become more of a favorite of the political establishment in the state, which is based in Indianapolis, which is where Messer's from, and Rokita hasn't. And basically, Rokita has sort of always had the sense, based on people talking to him, that, you know, this Messer guy gets all the breaks and I don't. And so then, basically, it's leading to a lot of animosity. There's a lot of resentment between the two of them, and that's all just coming out now after the two of them had, you know, kept it hidden away for a very long time.
So what we're seeing now has been building for some time?
Yeah, it's building towards what we're seeing now, and it's really, it's pretty remarkable. Generally, when Senate primaries become nasty like this, it is in sort of the immediate weeks or months leading up to the actual election. It's very unusual for it to be happening sort of right now. This is, you know, 8 or 9 months before any vote's going to be cast.
Is the primary reason for all the nastiness, or is this an extremely vulnerable seat?
It's definitely a combination of the two. Like, Joe Donnelly is one of the two most vulnerable Senate Democrats up for re-election in 2018. So whoever wins is going to have a pretty good chance of beating him and might even be the favorite coming out of the primary, favorite to defeat him. But it's also a matter of, you know, so this is something both of them want. And the fact that they both want it and they can't believe this other guy who they don't really think very highly of is standing in the way. So there's the resentment and just the sort of dismissiveness each one has towards the other where, you know, Messer thinks Rokita is a bit of a joke. Rokita thinks Messer is a bit of a joke. Now it's all coming out because they're both, you know, so close to the brass ring, so to speak.
Could this end up hurting them when it comes to the general election?
It could end up hurting them in the general. I don't think it's likely to hurt them very much. Part of the reason for that is the primaries in Indiana are pretty early. They're in May. So, for example, if either one of these campaigns spends all their money defeating the other, they have plenty of time to build back up their war chest, and there's just more time for, you know, hurt feelings to heal, so to speak. But, yeah, I mean, anytime you have a bloody primary, you risk alienating supporters of the other candidate. And those people, you know, they might not go out and vote for Joe Donnelly, but they might stay home on election day. So it is definitely something that could hurt them. It's unlikely to be the kind of thing where, you know, at the end where you say, well, Joe Donnelly won because this primary was so nasty. But if Donnelly wins by a small margin, it could be a factor.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin Robillard of Politico. It's 21 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Beyond the headlines, this morning's Mike Gavin is now here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, both the Real Police and the Fashion Police are on the hunt for a man accused of robbing stores in the St. Louis area. His calling card? Jean shorts. St. Louis County Police dubbed the suspect the jorts-wearing bandit in a tweet on Monday and included a photo. The tweet says the suspect's disregard for the law is as offensive as his disregard for fashion trends. All kidding aside, the bandit is accused of some serious offenses. Police spokesman Ben Granda says the unarmed suspect approached a cashier at a Walgreens store on August 8th and then overpowered her when she opened the cash drawer. The man is also suspected of targeting at least two Walgreens stores in the city of St. Louis. No serious injuries have been reported. Police said in an earlier tweet that anyone who recognizes the man should contact law enforcement or the fashion police. Jorts have been denigrated as a holdover of 90s men's fashion, but they've recently regained some popularity. Granda said he himself hasn't worn jorts since around 1997.
At least he wasn't wearing the jumpsuits that We're coming back for men, right?
Yes, yes. No jumpsuits, no jorts. Now, I have to say, probably, I mean, 97 might have been the height of that trend. They might have held over for me maybe till 98.
For me? Oh, you're admitting.
Well, sure. I mean, everybody did. Every guy did in the 90s wear those for at least, there was like a year or two where like pretty much everyone was wearing those, along with the white baseball caps with the funny sayings on the front. That was the 90s if you were, you know, my age and a guy at the time.
All right, if you're admitting it.
And if you are tired of hearing about the Kardashian and Jenner families, apparently you're not alone. There's a poll out by a company called ePoll Market Research, which, among other questions, asked respondents to name the most overexposed celebrities. Most notable in the results is that no less than 10 of the top 20 names on the list are members of the Kardashian clan, either by blood or marriage, and 7 out of the top 10, with Kim Kardashian taking the top spot, followed by her mom, Kris Jenner. Every other member of the famous family takes a turn on the list as well, including Kim's husband, Kanye West, Caitlyn Jenner, and Kim's half-sisters, Kendall and Kylie Jenner. Non-Kardashians on the list include Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus, along with sports figures such as Johnny Manziel, basketball dad LeVar Ball, and controversial quarterback Colin Kaepernick.
I am 1,000% with those who are sick to death of the Kardashians.
What do you mean? There's just because they have an entire cable channel called the E Network that's basically dedicated to them. The entire member of the family has their own show.
I
and
don't get it.
Different shows where two of them team up together to do funny things. And
although Johnny Manziel certainly slipped out of the spotlight,
he has, but he still landed like number 3 on this list, though. Somehow
that's surprising.
Yeah, yeah. I think
that's
people still think he's doing things when he's really not.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't done much of anything.
Nope.
Thanks, Mike. It's 14 minutes before the hour. This morning, America's First News. Gordon Deal with the week off. Jennifer Kashinka in for him along with Ross Akay. Researchers say they have taken a big step toward developing a test that can tell people if they have cancer long before the first symptoms show up. The team at Johns Hopkins University says the blood test detected the majority of cancers in people with 4 of the biggest ones, breast, colon, lung, and ovarian. Researchers say the test is a long way from being used to screen for cancer, but they were surprised to find they could find a high fraction of early stage patients having alterations in their blood. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Ross Akay is here with more of today's top stories.
Jen, the head of President Trump's legal team forwarded an email to several journalists that, among other things, argues there's no difference between Confederate General Robert E. Lee and George Washington. The New York Times published excerpts. Historians have been pointing out Washington worked to build a nation while Lee worked to destroy it. President Trump announced on Twitter he's dissolving his executive councils, quote, rather than put pressure on executives. After another wave of CEO defections in the wake of Trump's renewed equivocating about white nationalist violence in Charlottesville, 2 Virginia sisters injured in the Charlottesville car attack have filed a $3 million lawsuit against the Nazi-sympathizing motorist and several alt-right leaders. Tadrant and Micah Washington say in court papers they were in a car Saturday when James Fields Jr. plowed into a crowd of people and struck their vehicle, and that the crash caused the sisters to slam into the dashboard and windshield. Attorney General Jeff Sessions went to Miami to applaud the city's cooperation with federal immigration authorities and to slam so-called sanctuary cities.
These policies do far broader damage to the country than many understand. At its root, it is a rejection of our immigration laws and a declaration of open borders.
Officials in Chicago, San Francisco, and New York are prepared to file suit against the Trump administration if it withholds federal grant money from cities over the issue. Chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff General Joseph Dunford told reporters in Beijing today a military solution to the North Korean missile threat would be horrific, but allowing Pyongyang to develop the capability to launch a nuclear attack on the U.S. is unimaginable. State Department Heather Nauert says that doesn't mean negotiations with Pyongyang are happening anytime soon.
We are not anywhere near that point yet, and that is because North Korea has not stopped its destabilizing activities.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in says he would consider sending a special envoy to North Korea for talks if the North stops its missile and nuclear tests. The Northeast is dealing with a jump in tick-borne diseases, but fleas collected near Taylor, Arizona, have tested positive for plague. Navajo County public officials found the affected rodent burrows on private property, and they've treated them, but warning people to keep their dogs on leash, use flea treatment on their pets, and bug repellent on themselves.
It's incredible to think the plague is still around after thousands of years.
Absolutely. And right here in Arizona.
Totally creepy. Thanks. LaBoy and his cow didn't snag the top prize at the Iowa State Fair last weekend, but a photo of them taking a nap together after the contest is winning over the internet. 15-year-old Mitchell Miner and his heifer Audrey spent most of the summer together and formed a special connection during that time. Miner told the Des Moines Register that his cow likes to lay down quite a bit and enjoys his company. The teen from Williamsburg, Iowa, entered Audrey into a youth dairy cattle show at the Iowa State Fair. In the weeks leading up to the competition, he led, walked, and bathed her. On the day of the showing, he woke up at 3 a.m. to finish getting her ready, making it his third straight day of doing so. Despite the long hours and hard work, Audrey finished fifth out of seven contestants at the competition. Both were exhausted after the event and took a nap inside a barn where his father, Jeremy Miner, snapped pictures of them cuddling up. He posted a photo of the pair on Facebook with the caption, "Our son Mitchell and his heifer after showing yesterday." The post went viral, and as of Tuesday, it had tallied more than 24,000 likes, 2,500 shares, and hundreds of comments, many of which thanked the elder Miner for showing off the photo. And that'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.